You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Nine 17 on a Friday. Mike McNamara, Mike McNamara with you, joined by Michael Musselman, known as the Gunner. What's up? What are you doing?
I am washing my coffee mug out.
What kind of coffee mug do you have? You have some kind of, you must have some tricked out coffee mug as much as you like coffee.
Mac, this is going to come to a surprise to you.
It is going to come to us a surprise. If it's just like just some bullshit ceramic plain white mug, I'm dropping over in my chair.
Well, no, it's not. It's not that plain.
Oh, but it's not.
Yeah, I have three favorite coffee mugs.
Yeah.
One of them being my Boston Red Sox cup mug that I've had forever.
Don't be afraid to break that one.
No, that one's. This is actually endorsed by Major League Baseball. All proceeds, trademarks. And then my other one that I like is I have the Coffee Cup Cafe, Hyco, Texas. Family restaurant.
Family restaurant. Okay.
And then,
I like that.
And then the one I drink coffee at the most.
Yes.
Drum roll, please.
Survey says.
Is my 1st Marine Division clear glass coffee mug with the laser etched blue diamond on it and my last birthday ball mug.
Oh,
that General Mickelson gave him.
It was the door prize at the last ball.
No, it was actually made. He got it just for me. This one. Everybody else got like a highball glass.
Oh, does this one have your name on it?
Actually, no. Why doesn't it have my name on it?
Because it wasn't for you. Okay.
Well, he got it for me.
He regifted. No, he regifted it. He pulled the plaque off for him and said, "Hey, Gunner, will like this. He's a rube. He'll never figure it out."
But see, that's the coffee mug that I drink almost 99% of my coffee.
Really, 99%? Those glass ones, they're kind of weird because they show like all the dirt and everything. Where a ceramic one doesn't show that kind of. It doesn't show it as much
dirt. What are you drinking? What are you drinking?
God, look,
I don't
me.
Drink dirt.
Yes, you do.
I have dirt in my mug.
Could you? I mean, coffee mugs aren't really broken in until they have that nasty ass stain.
Ring?
In it. Yeah, that's disgusting. And then if you try to, I think somebody, since we're repairing or the North Korea dude, he needs to get on a PT program. Okay. I mean, if you watch the way he walks, he looks like he's like got some kind of lower extremity issue.
Yeah, well, did you notice he's one of those uncoordinated fat ass dictators? You know when they were shoveling the soil in that tree, that the Freedom Tree or whatever the hell it is? Did you see that?
I saw a glimpse of it. I didn't take it in detail.
So,
I will.
Oh, so I always take it in everything in detail.
I know. You're like Lee Majors with a bionic eye.
What I noticed about that was if you look at when he scoops the dirt, he's not coordinated. But when he threw the dirt, the South Korean president, when he tossed the dirt, it actually went into the tree. The North Kim, it went all over the base, the concrete base, and like on the ground. It was like spread out. It was like, 23 inches long spread. He didn't even know how to throw dirt from a shovel. It's just kind of like, blah. I'm like, what a buffoon, man. If you're going to be a leader of a country, at least know how to scoop with a shovel and throw it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He could use – so, look, I think we get on a plane, we go over there, and we give him some advice. So, and I know the North Koreans listen because they pop up. You should see some of the places that pop up on the – who listens to All Marine Radio. Beijing, China. What's up, folks?
Hello to Beijing.
Konnichiwa. I think that's Japanese. Anyway, I saw it in Back to the Future. Yeah, Marty McFly says that to his boss in the future, because Sony takes over the planet. No, we could help him out with his haircut. You could say, okay, look,
if you noticed, he's getting it. Okay, he's actually using more product in it, and he's combing it back. You know, so. It's getting a little bit longer. Hopefully the sides come back.
Yeah, that's what we need to do. We need to say, look, get on a plane, fly to San Clemente every couple weeks, go see – who's your girl in San Clemente?
What do you mean, my barber?
Yeah, your barber.
Oh, that'd be Shelly. Well, Shelly's the only one that left there. Heather left. She's in Pennsylvania.
All right.
But Shelly's the last one.
All right.
She's – still there.
So we'll hook him up with a good haircut, and then we'll get him on a little bit of a PT program. Not too much, because he doesn't look like a real PT-er. But, you know, you need to be able, like you said, when you throw a shovel of dirt, come on, man. You gotta get it close.
Yeah, you can't be a loser. I mean, how can you be a loser when you're shoveling dirt?
Yeah, ask,
I mean,
if you
look like a loser tossing dirt, you are a loser.
Yeah, you're a loser. So you might want to – you don't want to be like – do you want to be that guy? No, of course you don't want to be that guy. You want to be – now that you're kind of having your own coming out party, I think he's doing this. I think this is a lot of – this is motivated by, you know, he's like, do I want to hang out in North Korea for the rest of my life? For the love of God.
I want to go to, like –
yeah,
Las Vegas.
Yeah, hanging out with my sister and shit. Are you kidding me? I got to go, man. And look, I'll give these nukes up if it means I can jet around and get welcomed in Paris and Vienna and Moscow and Rome. And, you know, come on, man. I like...
Yeah, because he's got the opportunity to be treated as a legitimate world leader.
Yes. And I'm hanging out with my sister, and my people are eating vegetables with human feces on it. Hello?
Yeah.
What is, come on. Let's get, I got to go, man. I got to get this guy.
There's an opportunity. He'll get a Nobel Peace Prize out of this.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. I asked this to the chef. Are we talking, if you were going to make a guess, is it Lucy in the football, or is this legit? Okay.
What, the whole North Korea thing?
Yeah, the whole North Korea thing. What do you think?
Oh, I think this is Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds, man.
Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds.
Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds. The Beatles song about drugs.
I think
about
it's
cocaine.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I think is the phrase.
That's what I said.
I thought you said...
You're the one that said in Diamonds. I said Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Oh, all right. I stand corrected.
Lucy in the Sky.
Don't sing it. You know how I feel about your singing. Okay, don't.
Yeah, like everybody, the same way everybody feels about your singing.
Don't go there with your singing, okay? It's not that good. I'm going to talk to Jerry Durant today. Fired up about that? You know what, tell him you said hey?
Jerry. Yeah. Tell him you talked to me.
Oh, well.
He'll do his Jerry Durant chuckle.
How's Mike doing? He's going to Germany or someplace to go rafting.
Yeah, he's
a world traveler.
He's an adventurous guy. Yeah, he's an adventurous guy.
But he's tunned up because he's still doing contract work in Iraq, and those guys make all the money. Yeah, if you want to go back there.
He likes that shit, man. He likes the excitement.
But you know what? He knows how to work it. Now he's setting up schools for the Iraqi military. So it's not. It's like fly into the green zone, right? Hang out. So it's not like horrible work, you know? He did horrible.
You're going to Iraq, dude. It's horrible.
He did horrible work back in the day. But you have a point. You do have to go to Iraq to do it, but
makes it horrible. Dude.
There's Iraq, and then there's Iraq, right? What is it, Mike? Can you describe?
You're saying that there's a there's Iraq, and then there's Iraq, like Iraq, like you're sleeping.
There's Iraq, and then Iraq, right? Let me tell you, rich in Iraq is not like rich here. I mean, that when they're rich over there, they're like rich, rich.
Yeah, there's a big separation. There's no middle class in Iraq.
Yeah, there's no middle class. When you got money there, so yeah, Jared Rand. So tell us about your day yesterday. Who'd you teach? What'd you teach?
So I last minute, late at night, I had a phone call from one of my friends who works over at one of the gun places here, and he said, "Hey, I got a couple. It's their anniversary, and they want to do a gun class. Can you do it?" So I said, "Well, you know, have them call me, because I like to meet the people. You know, I want to know why you're doing it. You know." And so I talked to her on the phone, and she wanted to do it. It was her gift to her husband. So I said, "Yeah, sure, we'll do it." And then, of course, I didn't want to text you because hell, it would have been real late, and I didn't want that freaking bullshit. Yes. So I waited till like 7.
So he waits till the morning to do it.
That's he said, "Hey, I can't come on." But we had a great class. It was just the two of them.
And I responded, "Good luck. Have a good day."
Yeah, you were like, "Screw you, asshole."
Or words to that effect.
Yeah, but
I think I identified you with a body part. The
yeah.
But
you left out the K.
Did I?
You just wrote CIC. Yeah.
Damn it! I hate when that happens. The hold on, I got an email. I guess I missed the best call ever yesterday from Dick Bremer, who does the TV broadcast for the Twins. I was listening to Tim Hennessy this morning. He said that when the Yankees hit that walk-off home run yesterday, Bremer's only comment was, "There are no words." he's a TV guy for the Twins. That's all he said. Nothing else. Tim said it was the best call he's ever heard based on the dejection and the brevity in his voice. How funny. You know, there's some people who have a gift for that kind of stuff, and they don't feel like
baseball guys. Yeah,
they don't feel like they have the need to kind of do it the way everybody else does.
Same with hockey. You know, hockey commentators. Some of them are just fantastic to listen to. Football, not so much. There's no good other than, you know, Madden.
Yeah,
Madden was on.
Yeah, Madden broke the mold. He was himself.
Yeah, but today. No, there's no good football commentators. There's good hockey and baseball. You're one of some colorful ones. Listen to Boston when Boston's playing.
Here
Bruins,
we go.
Bruins, man.
Stop it.
The Bruins. Well, I just used that example.
I know.
You know, that rich accent, that Boston accent comes out, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so... What?
Yeah.
That's New York.
No, that's Boston.
You just did a New York accent.
That's Boston. Are you kidding me? Cuba. It's Cuba. Okay, not E-R, it's an A.
Dude,
stop it.
Don't even start, you know, with all the different accents, the Brooklyn, the Manhattan. New York is a horrible accent.
Phonics for massholes. Here's an email. Boston Red Sox Cup. Mac, tell Gunner to take that Boston Red Sox Cup with him the next time he has to go do a drug test. Think about it. Signed, an old Marine. 1973 to 1977. Yeah, Gunner.
Why would I take that to a drug test? You want me to pee in my cup?
No, just to have some coffee before you do your urinalysis.
Oh, okay. Is this another New York buddy friend of yours?
No, he's just a concerned listener. What about, can you explain, I'm not a coffee drinker, so is it important to have that dark coffee stain in a broken-in coffee mug? Because most of the ones that I've seen Marines drink out of, especially during deployments, those things are straight-up disgusting. Is there a... Can you taste the difference?
That's just pure laziness. There's no having a coffee ring in your mug. Everybody's like, "Oh, look at that." No, it just means you're a pig. That's all that means. It means you're lazy and you won't clean your cup.
Whoa.
I've never had that.
P-I-G, pig?
Yeah. It drives me crazy. They make excuses for the nostalgia of having a dirty coffee mug.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, but it adds flavor.
Marines are like that. They'll do stuff like that. They try to play that whole trick about, this is why. And it, like you said, straight up laziness. Here's another email. Mac, have the gunner finish about his class with the husband and wife. How did it go? What did they do? So, yeah, tell us about your day, sweetheart.
It was a license to carry class.
Oh.
Young couple, probably mid-20s. And they were just a really good couple. It was funny because the girl, she was really kind of nervous.
Right.
And I said, why are you nervous? She's like, well, you know, I don't shoot as much as my husband, and I'm really kind of nervous about taking the firearms test. And I said, oh, you know, you're going to be fine. You'll be fine. Trust me. You'll be fine. And I said, do you shoot? She goes, yeah. And I said, what do you shoot? She goes, well, my husband has me shoot, and check this out. And he didn't listen to the show. But he says, my husband has me shoot, we get those paper Chinette plates. They're about 10-inch wide, 10-inch paper plates, and we put those out. And we shoot those. And I said, perfect target. Perfect target. So I said, so you shoot the 10-inch plate? She goes, yeah. And I go, what range does he make you shoot those? She goes, oh, 25 yards. And I said, okay, listen. And do you hit the plate? She goes, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I hit the plate all over the place, but it's 10 inches. And I said, well, you're in luck because the target that you're shooting at today for a maximum score is 12 inches. And you're not going to shoot it at 25. You're going to shoot it at 15 is the furthest. So she went there. She scored. She shot. So out of a possible 250, she shot a 248.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well done.
So, yeah, her husband shot a 248 as well. And he was shooting a 45. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. But they were a good couple, good class. We had a good time. We laughed a lot, but it's nice. I like the small, personable type stuff.
Small group.
We could take time. Yeah, take your time, do your thing. And so they want to do some extra classes. So I got, like I said, I got a bunch. I got a couple of ladies that want to do some classes one-on-one, like home defense, like how do I defend myself in my home? So we're going to go through that. We're going to work on that with these ladies. And then we're going to do, I have some concealed classes we're teaching some other groups, from the waistband, or wherever you're carrying, appendix, hip, or back carry, or in your purse, whatever it is, we'll go through the actual drawing, how to draw the weapon and employ it and shoot. And then we're going to do weekend strong hands, magazine reloads, to simulate. You get hit in your right arm, you get hit in the right arm. Now what do? You give up? Oh, I'm dumb. I'm shot. No, you fight through. And here's some ways to you can think of, and it's just your imagination. How do you rack the slide when you only got one hand? How do you load the weapon when you only got one hand? And it's not your right hand. It's not your strong hand. Yeah. So those are difficult. You got to practice those.
When you only have one hand.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
There's numerous ways. Well, see, now you're gonna ask me to give you an example. It's tough to talk through it, to visualize it. So I'll give you one example. So if you're right-handed, you're shooting with your left, and your right hand is incapacitated, you can't really make it work.
Right.
But you eject your magazine, what they call, and so eject the magazine and then put the gun either in between your legs or tuck it back in between your arms. So bring it back up. So, I'd show you, but so it's in the armpit with the magazine up, right?
Got it. So I'm shooting with my left hand. I can't use my right hand, but I can use my right armpit. I can't use my right hand, but
I can't use your right arm at all.
I can't use my right armpit?
No, you don't want to. So just all you have to do is invert the gun and put it in your left armpit. Boom. Right? Magazine's out. Grab the magazine, place it inside there, seat it, turn it around. And then if you have to rack it, you can either do it it hurts, you know, but do it into your forearm. Use the muscle, press down on your right arm or in your left leg.
You told me I couldn't.
Right,
you couldn't. You told me I couldn't use my right arm.
No, you can't use it in the sense of moving things, but it's still hanging from your body. You can press against it.
Okay. So, or I can. So, I would press a slide against my thigh, and then shove it to the rear like that.
Well, yeah, you're gonna. So, the best way to probably example is if you got a gun, put it in your thigh, and rack it, and it's gonna hurt. You know, you basically push forward and racking it, putting pressure into your thigh or your arm or whatever body part. You can do it in your chest if you have to, and then just rack it away from you. You know, it's going to hurt, but it's going to hurt a lot less than dying. So
that's critical.
But there's a lot of ways, man. I mean, it's just, and I know you can do it off the, you know, you can rack it on the corner of your boot. The problem with that is you got to lift your leg up, or you got to be sitting down. You know, why I like to do it just against the body, because you can still look forward. The gun is in your hand. You're still looking at the target, and you just press it in your body and rack forward. And I know you'll see people that'll come in and say, "Well, I was told to rack it off the bottom of my shoe." That's great, but again, you're in a gunfight. If you're sitting down, perfect. If you're standing up, not so good. Because you're going to be 1 foot, you're going to, you know, basically balancing, you're losing blood. It's not a good thing to do is get 1 foot up off the ground. Or rack it on something, like an object, if you can get, you know, the rear sight, catch it on the back of the rear sight, and then go forward. Doesn't have to do your body, just use your imagination. Get through it. But there's got to be different ways. So we train, and I'll show them like 6 or 7 different ways of loading a semi-automatic or even a revolver. Revolver would be much easier, for the simple fact that all you gotta do is, you can do that one-handed, dump the cylinder,
right.
Hold the gun with one hand, and still load it with one hand. So you got your cylinder out, you're sticking your two middle fingers through the open area of the cylinder, so it's kind of saddling, it's like a, what I call saddling the gun, right? I'll send you a picture so you can understand. I sent you a picture of my mug, did you see that?
No.
Did you see that?
No, somebody just sent me an offer that says there's 50% off Ray-Bans today.
Oh, that's cool.
I know.
So what's look at your email or your text message, not your email, text message.
Text message, which phone? The one you're on right now or my other one?
Your other one, your personal.
Right. I haven't got it yet.
So
I'm looking at it.
You
sure?
Don't have the mug?
Are you sure you sent it to me? No. You sent it to me. The last thing I got from you says Siri doesn't know the word bra. That's the last thing I got.
It says not delivered. It's going right now. Sending, okay. And it went. Boom.
All right. I got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
Oh, I talked to Duffy White yesterday.
How's Duffy?
Duffy's good. Duffy's a happy, fun guy to be around. He's smart, but he doesn't act like he's, you know, he's not one of those guys who's constantly trying
to. No, he plays the game.
Yeah. But he's a good dude. He retired out of the Marine Corps as a colonel, living in, back in Tennessee where he was born and raised and, raising his family and whatnot. But we were doing kind of a battlefield study thing. And I think, so here's one of my questions. I listened to it after we did it and, it's not very good. Should I tell him or should I just put it on?
Oh, I just put it on. It's someone else's point of view.
No. It's too familiar, in my opinion. It's like sometimes we're talking a little bit too much inside baseball, and we're talking about the move. You know, first LAR's movement during the march up. And we don't have the map straight, you know what I mean? So it's kind of confusing. Should I tell him and say, "Hey, Duff, we need to redo this"? I think I should.
Redo it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I should too. Cause the stuff he says. Now, Duffy, Duffy's funny, by the way. He's a funny dude.
Duffy's. Yeah, he's as funny as they get.
Right? So he's born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee, right? And he does does his Elvis Presley stuff, the King, and all this, it's funny. But he tells this legit story about being spanked by Brother Ansel Miner at the Something Sub Baptist Academy that he and his brother. He said, yeah, he pulled a big paddle off the wall. All right, boys, bend over. He said, we got smoked. And my brother, and then he like, I think they had to say thank you or something like that. But it was pretty funny.
Yes, thank you, brother. May I have another?
but he's like, I'm not kidding you one bit. And but when Duffy, I can't remember, he's a major, if I recall. But he was one of the guys who carried the football for President Clinton.
For Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Those are the funniest stories
ever.
Oh,
my God. But I said, you know, I had a really cool experience, very unplanned, in 2004 when I met Mike. But General Mattis's aide got wounded. And by a series of personnel moves, I wound up becoming what's known as a staff sec, working for General Mattis and General Kelly and for Colonel Dunford. But what it allowed me is I got to be like the coffee fetcher and Mac write that down in meetings with Ambassador Bremer, General Sanchez, all these. I mean, these guys were deciding what was going on in the events that the world was watching around Fallujah and Ramadi. And it was really cool. Duffy got a chance to do that with the President of the United States. I mean, he was there. So I said, what were the coolest things you can talk about that you saw? And one, he said, we went down to see when John Glenn went up in that space shuttle mission. He goes, I got a chance to see that. And I said, that was probably a good seat, yeah? He said, yeah, President normally gets a pretty good seat. He said, it was awesome, though. To see it, to be there, standing there when the president spoke to, you know, Senator Glenn before he lifted off. And he said, it was cool. And he said, the second one was, he said, when we went to South Africa, Nelson Mandela took the president to the prison that he was held in. Took him to his
I remember that.
Took him to his prison cell. And he said, so, you know, you get to go on this tour with these incredibly historic figures to Nelson Mandela's cell. And then he talked about a Medal of Honor that was presented to General Day, who was for actions during World War II. He went ashore on Okinawa as a PFC. When I was a second lieutenant, and this goes back to, like, I think I've told you this story about stopping power. I'm a second lieutenant, and I'm eating chow at the Buccaneer at Camp Hansen in Okinawa. Okay? The Buccaneer was this restaurant, and you could go there, kind of a restaurant, right? Kind of a PX restaurant, blah, and it was painted pink. And I don't know why it was called the Buccaneer, but it was. And so I grabbed the Daily Okinawan newspaper that came out, and I'm sitting there eating rice and whatever else I'm eating with my other lieutenant buddies. And I'm reading this article. General Day is now the commanding general of Camp Butler, which is the bases on Okinawa as a brigadier general, I think. And he was slated to retire a couple years later. And so they asked him, like, the Humvee was leaving. The 45 caliber semi-automatic pistol was leaving. The SAW was coming in. The Dragon and the TOW had come into the inventory. And he said, so the guy interviewed him said, is there anything, any weapon that you hate to see go with all these changes?
The 45.
And he says the 45. He said, I don't know that you could really appreciate the 45 till you shot somebody with it. And I remember reading that laughing, like, that's funny. He said, you know, you all you had to do was nick somebody, it would knock them down, and then you could shoot them when they're on
the ground. Oh, my God.
And then he said, then you could shoot them when they're on the ground and take care of business. You're not going to hear that in too many different places, too many other places than a Marine Corps publication. But anyway,
my question would have been, General, how many people have you shot with other pistols? Well, none.
None.
So you're judging, shooting a person with one gun as you should see.
See,
yeah.
And you wonder why wonder why nobody likes you. So anyway,
I know. Go ahead.
So he said that at some reunion, there was guy from World War II. Guy said, "What happened to your Medal of Honor that was written up?" And he said, "You know, Okinawa ended. Their casualty rate was so high that he had been written up for it, and then it had never been followed through. So they went back and they found the clerk who had a copy of it at his home." What? And then because of the time, they had to find at least two eyewitnesses, and they ran those down. They rewrote statements, and Duffy said that they presented General Day his Medal of Honor in the spring of 1998. He died in October of 1998, but he said it was the third coolest thing he saw. But pretty interesting stuff. Pretty interesting stuff. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, did Duffy say hi? Did he say, "Hey, tell Gunner said hi"?
Yeah, he talked about you. Because, you know, he was talking about, you know, you guys are essentially moving up that power line road, right? And people have this vision of the march up being all desert, right? Well, first LAR is moving up this road. They've got the interstate on the other side of the Tigris River that Second Tanks is hauling ass up. But they're in this marshy land. They can't get off the roads. Because, you know, you'll get stuck, and you can slug it out there. And so he talks about, he tells a story. Mike, tell a story about having live chickens with you.
Well, we had the chickens because of gas. So they put chickens in a cage because they thought, I don't know why they want chickens, I forgot. Stacy something was our NBC officer. He said chickens.
He was funny too. What's Stacy's last name?
Oh yeah. I don't know, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
He was hilarious.
Funny.
And so Stacy comes out with this whole chicken idea. So everybody gets chickens and they're either strap them to the Humvees, in a cage or, you know, and most of the chickens don't even make it the first, you know, it was kind of funny. It was Marines that were like, "Oh shit, I didn't know you had to feed and give water to the chicken." I'm like, how did you think it was going to survive? You know, absorb it out of the air. And then we had other Marines that were like chicken farmers growing up. So they fell in love with their chickens. They named them. They took care of them. I mean, Jesus. But we had chickens, so they would, if you see the chicken die, that meant gas was there, but then we kind of came to that conclusion of, well, your chicken dies, and then you're still looking at it without a gas mask. I mean, you're going to die too. I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense afterwards, but it was pretty funny to have chickens. And then at one point, we ate some of the chicken. It was like, you know what? I don't think they're going to use gas, and this chicken is mighty fine, and he looks pretty good, and we're going to eat him. So there was always that option.
But there was a constant, Duffy was talking about you, thought that you guys should be using Q-tips to clean out the sinuses of the chickens to keep those things clean.
Oh, no, I brought it up. I said, cause they were dying because, the nose of a chicken is in its beak. The two little slits at the top.
Right.
And they're very, very, very small, but the chickens aren't designed to live in the desert. They just don't have that capability. So their noses would clog up with dirt and sand, and the only way to keep them alive was to clean it out with Q-tips. So you had to do PM on your chicken, preventive maintenance on your chicken. And if you didn't do preventive maintenance on your chicken, your chicken was dead.
That is classic. That is classic, yeah. And then, but the thought, and he, it was interesting because he was talking about, you know, that, you know, the intel about they were going to use chemical weapons, Okay.
Yeah. I didn't like that. I mean, I didn't buy into it.
But
I don't know if he told you a story where I refused to put on, like, the boots, the rubber galoshes,
no,
and then I burned my NBC suit after he told me not to.
He didn't say that. Now, this is the same guy who was talking about how he follows all the rules. What was that, on Tuesday? Yeah. This is what I mean.
No, I follow rules that make sense.
That's not what you said. You said you follow the rules. He is in no way, shape. He was in no way, shape, or form a rule follower. But he said it was. He said, "Look," he said, "you know, we kept getting this. There's going to be a red line that we cross, and they're going to slime us. They're going to slime us with chemical weapons." And as we closed on Baghdad, there was that constant. Look, the red line's got to be around here someplace, because other than that, this thing's done, right? It's going to be over.
Yeah.
And he said that constant fear. But he said, yeah, you guys slugging up the power line road just west of the Euphrates was not a fun event.
Well, and people need to understand, when you're in an LAV, you're standing the whole war. You know, you're not sitting down. I stood the whole damn war. You know, the whole invasion, I was standing. That sucks, man, after a while.
Yeah.
That gets really, really old.
And not easy on your body either. And then you're also getting thrown around a little bit. And that LAV is not the smoothest. I mean, it's not a bad ride as things go. But that steel that that surrounds you, it's not the most forgiving stuff. It'll beat you up. And then you got to, and then, what was the day temperature? Did the heat from the engine compartment, was that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's always a bad thing. What are you talking about? That's silly.
No, when it's cold, it feels good. When it's hot and you get that hot air blowing up your nose all day, it's brutal.
It's not just hot air. It's hot, greasy air. Your LEV is always leaking FRH, which is the hydraulic fluid that makes the turret go. It makes the turret and everything else break. I mean, everything work.
Do you think that's meant to be ingested into your lungs or not?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. I think it's you know, one of those things that you look back and you're thankful that you got to breathe in all that FRH.
Exactly. So no, he's I was. It's interesting because I think most people have this vision of the march up, you know, like these speeding columns, and you guys couldn't even get off road. And because of the nature of the terrain. So, interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, there was some times that were very, very mundane, very slow going. Yeah, I mean, it's never that exciting, like they make it out to be the stories of the movies. Yeah, I must have missed that part. I don't know. Mine was actually rather boring, kind of to the point where you're like, oh, please, but today, just a flesh wound, just to change it up. I'll take a bullet just to see what it's like. Please, somebody.
A little bit of
Yeah, give me some excitement.
He made an interesting comment, though, about discipline and being able to, you know, stupid stuff like fluid in vehicles, because, you know, if you don't do those, if you can't do the basic stuff and you can't do it on a consistent basis, you lose these assets that are really important.
Right.
And he said, you know, those continuing action by young Marines, he said, and they were awesome at it in our battalion. You know, keeping vehicles up and then mechanics that are familiar with different vehicles and different companies, how important that is, because they know them. They know the issues with them, and it's not new guys looking at stuff. He said, so those little things that you may not think are important become hugely important to be able to operate on a daily basis. So interesting. I did not hear this story. So tell me the story about you, burning your mop. Your mop gear. So you're the only one in the division that's rolling around? Stacy Jean Burt.
Jane Burt. Yeah, Jane Burt. Who sent that?
I just remembered it.
Oh, someone sent it, man.
No, I don't know why. Let me tell you, he was still with the division in 2004.
Yeah, he was a division NBC officer.
And let me tell you, Stacy is funny. And
oh,
for whatever reason, like, funny people gravitate to each other. I'm funny, he's funny, so we became funny friends.
Because
he would say shit in meetings, and you're like, who's that guy? Because
Stacy was really close to, like, what I was as a gunner. He was in NBC.
But no, you're right. And it's elements of humor, elements of the truth, and not afraid to do it in public.
And he was a very competent, competent guy.
Yeah, no, because you can't survive like that if you're an idiot, if you don't know what you're doing. The only way you can survive is that, you know what he said, it was right. Damn it, I hate that shit, man. I know.
I hate when he's right.
We all hate it, but guess what? He was right again. Damn it. We need to put an end to that because you know what? And that's what people who get called out in public, that's what they say. Damn it, man, that guy.
Yeah, right.
He was right. I don't care, man. Man, he embarrassed me.
Yeah, I just don't like to be proved.
He embarrassed
me. I don't like to be proved wrong.
He embarrassed me in public. Well, then, whose fault is that? I think that's your fault for giving him the opportunity because you were selling snake oil in public. Sell snake oil in private. Yeah, that's probably a good point.
Yeah, I'm not blaming you for being a snake oil salesman. Just don't be one around me.
Yeah. And if you choose to do it in public,
you're going to get, wins, play stupid games, you're going to win stupid prizes.
Stupid prizes. Oh, my God. The email. Matt, could you go over the Chinette plate thing again? Is there a diameter that Gunner would recommend? Or is it any Chinette?
Yeah, start off with the big plate first, of course. And I always said 10 shots.
10
pistol,
shots.
Pistol, rifle, no matter what, 10 shots at a given yard, range. And I come up with 90%. So you're allowed one miss, right?
Oh, okay.
And this ain't shooting like taking your time and aiming. This is, this is combative. This is from a low ready or something like that. You're engaging a target.
Okay, so it's we're not going to stand there.
So here's what I used to do, Mac. Here's how this started. So I took a 6-inch plate.
Oh.
And the reason I took a 6-inch plate was it was kind of the whole, that's the vital area of a human being. So if you get a 6-inch plate around your center chest, given, in its shot placement, but 9 times out of 10, if you get it within 6 inches of the center, you're going to cause severe damage to the person. Either you're going to incapacitate them or you're going to kill them.
Okay.
So 6 inches. And here's what I did. Is I started out at, I think it was 50 yards, and we were doing rifles first, at 50 yards. And then I went at 50 yards, went to 100. And then at 300 yards, I went in increments of 25. So 325, 350, 375. 400, 425, all the way to 500. Okay?
Got it.
And then what I did was, you're given 10 rounds. You could miss two. So you had to get 80% or better to advance to the next plate. Once you missed, and once you shot 70%, you missed the three at that plate. I gave you one more chance. If you passed, if you did it again, then that was your combat effective range as an individual. And so when I did this as company commanders, and said, don't rely on the gun. The gun says combat effective range with an M16 is 500 on an area target, 550 on a point target. That's a lie because that's a book. And they're not taking the into the effect of the individual. The error in what he does, his grip and stance and everything, and his follow through on how he is. And then the gun's inherent issues, our rifles weren't perfect. They weren't match grade guns. They're built in mass. So they had an error. somewhere around a minute or 2 minutes of angle. So that meant if you could fire three rounds and they were all within 2 inches of each other, it was a passable gun, right? So when you take in all of those effects, and that came out to, that was your individual combat effectiveness. And if you did it to your platoon, and your platoon was, let's say, overall, and I think when I did it to a group of individuals, like a platoon, the average was about 250 yards. Past that, they can hit the target 80% of the time. So, and I know you're thinking, but wait a second, you go to the red place, you shoot 500 yards. Right, but you're shooting a big-ass target. It's a 6 foot. Remember we talked about this. It's a 6 foot by 6 foot target you're shooting at. Yes, the bullseye's in the middle, but you're frame holding. You're cheating. You're using the whole 6 foot by 6 foot brace, and you're aiming center mass of that. Okay? But when you're shooting the actual vitals at a vital area, we really saw what they were capable of doing. So when you had a platoon that was only capable of engaging vital areas of a human being at 250 yards, well, you had two options. You know, either train them, get them better, or start putting your kill boxes in at 250 yards and in.
Hmm.
Or rely on your area weapons, like your machine guns and everything else, to do all that stuff, to create those big beaten zones, to pin them down, you know, and to cause him to put him in the horns of a dilemma.
Why do you say it like that?
Oh, I used to say it like that. Every time we talk about maneuver warfare, and I always make fun of, because we talk about commanders, and I'd say, next, and we'd give classes like TDGs and stuff, I'd say, next, we're going to do a TDG that's going to put your enemy in the horns of a dilemma. Because it was like a buzzword. Everybody, at TBS, all the instructors would always talk about stuff. And then the enemy is going to be put in the horns of a dilemma. You're like,
right.
What does that mean, Captain? What does the horns of a dilemma mean?
And yeah. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
What if it's a Texas Longhorn, and it's 8 feet between points? That's a pretty big area to be in. And since they don't face forward, they face out to the side, he's not going to gore you with his horns. Whereas a Mexican bull or a Spanish bull, you know, you're talking about anywhere from a foot to 2 feet. So what kind of bull are you talking about? Or maybe it's a steer, and it's not a male at all, and they don't want to gore you at all. Then I want to be in the horns of a dilemma, because that bull, that steer is not going to do anything to me. And they look at you like, you're such an ass gunner.
He is an ass. He's a straight up ass. Well, you know, we have this philosophy, and really it's smart guy, you know, philosophy. I just saw somebody just sent me a picture of the chickens. NBC pigeons proved to be a sentimental species that could survive the tough living conditions of the Marines. So you didn't
not
have
a nice PETA.
You
PETA
didn't
come after us.
No kidding. Did you have a pigeon or a chicken?
I had a chicken.
Oh, okay. Right. This is a picture of a pigeon.
I didn't see any pigeons.
How funny.
Did we have pigeons? No, we had chickens.
This thing says it was a... this thing says there was a pigeon.
Yeah, I could have swore we had chicken.
Hey, can we do a... I got a request for us to do a program about the Glock 19. Can you take a few pictures of a Glock 19? And can we talk through the features of the Glock 19 and why you like it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right.
It's
all right.
One of my favorite handguns.
Okay. All right. And there's the 19 and there's the 19X, right?
Yeah, the new 19X is the newest version of it.
Okay. All right. So we'll do that next week. All right. We're over. What are you doing this weekend?
I got a class tomorrow. Another license carry class. And then, the mother-in-law's in town this weekend. The wife and her are going to the wine walk here in Granbury.
Doesn't she, I thought your mother-in-law No, it's your sister-in-law that lives. Doesn't your sister-in-law lives down there? Yes.
Yeah, she lives here. Yep, she lives in here.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. All right, I have a personal question I need your opinion on that I'm going to call you about in a few minutes. So have a good weekend.
All right, talk to you.
All right, later. That is the Gunner here on a Friday. It's Bananarama. That's not how we end the program, though. And to be honest with you, this is not how we end the program today either. The the commanding officer of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 26 Marines, who I had the pleasure of meeting through Ken Rogers, a retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel by the name of Ken Pipes, passed away yesterday. And 50 years of government service. 20-something in the Marine Corps, and then he retired and went to work for the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. And in that capacity, he helped veterans on a regular basis. San Diego County has some pretty unique programs relative to their veteran population, which is a pretty big population given the Marine population and the Navy population in San Diego County. And he was a part of that. He was a part of that. And so I got a message this morning early and saying that we lost our skipper. Ken Pipes passed away yesterday. So I wanted to the ending of the program today, certainly dedicated to the skipper of Bravo Company 126, during the siege of Khe Sanh. I got a chance to get to know him over the course of the last couple years through Ken Rogers, and he was a great guy who loved Marines and the Marine Corps, specifically loved his Marines and the courage that they showed when fate pointed in their direction in late January 1968. And then for the following 77 days. So, Skipper Pipes, as he was known to his Marines, this is dedicated to him today. we'll celebrate his life. And be our thoughts and prayers certainly go out to the Pipes family. But, and to his Marines, celebrate his life. Celebrate the fact that in a time when you needed a leader, that you were fortunate enough to have him. And you not only had him then, but you had him for the rest of your life. That's a good deal. Something to celebrate. And then take a little piece of his life, make it part of yours every day, and he's always with you. So, that's as good as it gets. On a Friday, my thanks to the head chef for coming on. Obviously, the gunner for coming on today. Always appreciate. Mike is no small part of the program. His fans love him. And you can see why we've been friends for a long time. And he's a big part of All Marine Radio, his personality. So even though I'm callous towards him on occasion, he's a great friend, even if he is a Red Sox fan. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Dan Lamothe is going to join us on Monday. He's from the Washington Post. He's just in Afghanistan and in the Helmand province. So we'll talk to him about some of the things that Roger Turner said when we heard from Roger Turner via Brookings Institute last week. And we'll get Dan's thoughts on the trend lines in the war in Afghanistan on Monday. So don't miss out. It'll be good. He's a smart guy, writes good stuff. Dan Lamothe, Lamothe, writes for the Washington Post, writes military stuff. Have a good weekend on a Friday. Keep the Pipes family in your thoughts and prayers. All Marine Radio, out.